How's everybody doing this morning? All right, good. You were really too fast at that because you didn't give me enough time to get down here. I had this whole intro plan. Anyway, we're glad you're here today. I just got to give a little disclaimer. As soon as the service is over, our staff, we've got to book out of here because we're all going to go hop on a little plane and fly over to Mackinac Island for a wedding for our dear staff member, Amber Widener, who is getting married today. And we're gonna fly over there, and I'm going to officiate her ceremony. I'm excited about it. It'll be a good time. So anyway, so don't be offended if you see me run. I'm not running from you, okay? So you know. You know, almost everywhere you look nowadays, you find warnings. You ever notice that? I mean, almost everywhere you look, warnings. Warnings on labels, warnings on signs, warnings on TV commercials. I mean, everywhere you look, there's warnings. In fact, if you go home today and you open up your cabinet, look underneath the sink, you'll probably find some warnings on some of your everyday household products even. In fact, I thought I would share a couple warnings that I ran across on some pretty typical products that we might find in our homes. Here's one. On a bottle of shampoo for dogs, there's this warning. Warning. The contents of this bottle should not be fed to fish. All right, I don't know. Anyway, okay, here's one. On a hair dryer, okay? I mean, everyone uses a hair dryer. Do not use in the shower. Okay, and all I have to say is if you have to be told that, you probably should not even be using a hairdryer, okay? You probably should not be using anything electrical if you have to be warned of that. Okay, anyway, here's one on a sleep aid tablet that you can take, you know, if you have a hard time sleeping. Caution, may cause drowsiness. Here's one on a package of Silly Putty. It warns us, a warning, not for use as earplugs. Here's one. How about an iron? You know, you iron your clothes? Here's one. Caution. Never iron clothes while they are being worn. Oh, man. Okay, how about some warning signs? There's a few warning signs I thought I would show you this morning. Look at the screen. Our other screen's out here. It's not working accurately. Okay, here we go. Here's one. Danger ahead. Fasten safety belts and remove dentures. Now, can I just say that if you come across a sign like that, maybe you should stay clear of that road, okay? Here's another one, the second one. Look at this. Warning, to avoid throwing passenger out of car, avoid sudden sharp turns. And there's a dude, he's just kind of, you know, hanging out. Okay, let's go to the next one. Slow down or die, okay? No beating around the bush here. Here we go. Touching wire causes instant death. $200 fine. So, see, not only will you die, but you'll be charged $200. And then here's the last one. Caution, no warning signs. Anyway, you'll get that if you just think about it for a second. But seriously, everywhere you look, you'll find warnings. And, you know, as ridiculous as some of these that we looked at here, as ridiculous as some of these might seem, you know, some warnings, in fact, are very helpful. And in fact, without warnings at all, we would probably all be in pretty rough shape, wouldn't we? Because we all know that warnings are designed to help us. That's right, warnings are designed to keep us from potentially dangerous situations. Everywhere you look, you find warnings. And the Bible is no exception. In fact, if you open up the Scriptures, you will find a handful of warnings that fortunately make a lot more sense than the ones, you know, we looked at here a second ago. But these warnings that are in the Bible are there to help us. They're there to save us from potentially dangerous situations. And I want to begin this morning by looking at a warning. It's found in the book of 1 Peter. If you have your Bibles, if you want to grab your Bible, or you can look up at our screen this morning. But 1 Peter chapter 5, and 1 Peter was written by a guy named, can anyone guess? Peter, yes, okay. And, okay, I guess that wasn't funny. But anyway, in writing to this church, he's writing actually to a group of churches, to a group of Christ followers, and he gives us a warning, and I want us to look at that. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 says this, "Be careful. Watch out for attacks from the devil, your great enemy. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for some victim to devour." Verse 9, "Take a firm stand against him and be strong in your faith." Be careful, he says. Watch out for the attacks from the devil, your great enemy. Now, before I go any further, let me just say that I know what, you know, some of you might be thinking right now, Scott, come on, seriously, the devil? I mean, do you mean to tell me there is really this dude named Satan? I mean, do you really believe that there's a devil out there? And my answer to that question is yes, I do believe there is. But I think that probably as a modern day society, we have probably done somewhat of a created a problem for ourselves, because we have sort of commercialized Satan, haven't we? We have sort of created this character named Satan or the devil, you know, who walks around in a tight red suit, and you know he's got little horns, and you know he carries a pitchfork around with him. And in fact, there's a little picture right there. That way you don't think I was talking about Santa Claus here. But anyway. You know, but we have done that, and I think in so many of our minds, we have turned Satan into like this cartoon character from Tom and Jerry. But we've forgotten that the Bible indicates that Satan, or AKA the devil, the evil one, whatever you want to call him, really exists. Evil exists. And a force of evil exists that would love nothing more than to lead you and your household the opposite direction of God. And this warning that we've been given by Peter tells us that the enemy of our lives says that he prowls around like a roaring lion looking for some victim to devour. And you know, I think it's interesting that the writer says here that this evil force is looking for victims. He's looking for a victim. Well, so who's the victims that he's looking for? Well, I think you could probably replace that word victims with a lot of words. I think you could take the word marriages. You could say, you know, Satan is looking for marriages to devour. Or you could throw the word in there, maybe teenagers. Satan is looking for teenagers to devour. Or you could throw in adults or singles or households and so on and so forth that he is looking to devour. And our enemy would love nothing more than to divide up our households in a wicked way. And I think probably if there's anywhere that he could start to accomplish that, it would be in our marriages. Because I tell you what, man, the enemy of our lives, I think he knows the power that a great marriage contains. I think he knows that when you have a man and a woman who are united, when you've got a man and a woman who love each other for better or for worse, or richer or poorer, and sickness and in health, and until death do us part, I think when he knows, and when he knows that there is incredible power when you have a couple who's committed to God and to each other. And so we have to be aware. And we have to be alert. Imagine with me for a second that you own a home located in the middle of the deepest, darkest section of the Amazonian jungle. Go ahead, picture that. You see it? And all around you are all kinds of wild animals. In fact, if you go to the Amazon, you're going to see some freaky animals. For example, you know, in the suburbs, you know, here we're feeding the hummingbirds. Okay, in the Amazon, you're feeding vultures. Okay, and so you've got vultures like hanging out in your front yard, and then you've got all these reptiles. Man, forget little garden snakes. Man, you have got like the anaconda You got the Bushmaster. You got some serious reptiles hanging out at your house in the middle of the Amazon. You talk about mammals. You sit in your house, you see deer outside. Isn't that cute? You're sitting in the Amazon, you got jaguars running across your yard. You know, you got all kinds of wild monkeys hanging out. Well, imagine with me that you're living in this home right in the middle of the Amazon jungle, and you decide one day that you are going to take a vacation. And we'll make this interactive, so where should we take a vacation to? Okay, you're not used to that. Tahiti, okay. We're going to go to Tahiti. Did you someone say Nebraska? Oh, Alaska. I thought someone said Nebraska. I said, no one goes on vacation in Nebraska. Okay. Anyway, so you decide to go to Alaska, okay? And of course, you're running late. You're getting all your bags packed, and you are getting everything together because, of course, you have to catch your plane to get to Alaska. And so you got all your stuff, and you run out the front door, and you jump in your truck, and you head off to the nearest airport. You get on the airplane. You fly to Alaska, and you're hanging out doing whatever people do in Alaska, and maybe you're hanging out, you know, in the snow. I don't know. What do they do in Alaska? You're hunting or something. And you know, you're having a good time, and all of a sudden you realize, I forgot to shut the front door. Can you even begin to imagine the animal festival that is going on in your living room at that very moment? I mean, can you imagine? You got monkeys, you have snakes, you've got bears, you got jaguars and vultures hanging out at your pad. You'd come home to a pretty big mess, I'm pretty sure. I mean, your house would be torn up. Now, let's say that this house in the middle of the jungle represents your marriage. And just like your house, your marriage is made up of a bunch of doors and windows. And take a look at that house. Take a look at your marriage this morning. Look at the doors. Has the front door maybe been left open? Now, if you're like me, you usually think about that, and you say, well, no, I mean, no, my front door is not open. I mean, man, that door's closed. And so we get up, we go up here, we look behind the white picket fence, and we go, yes, all right, cool. The doors are closed. I guess I'm okay. They're shut. Oh, but wait a minute. What about the windows? Have we checked all the windows? Could some windows be open? Because, see, I think that what happens in so many of our marriages is that we look at the surface of our marriage relationship and we say, okay, look, hey, the front door is closed, man. I mean, there's no big issues. I'm not like having an affair with anyone. I mean, hey, everything's cool. I'm just like I'm beating my wife or something. I mean, no, everything's all right. There's no big sin going on. But we forget to get our eyes off the front door and look at the windows. And this morning, let's say that the doors and the windows on that house represent needs. Say that word with me this morning, would you? Needs. Needs. We all have needs, all of us. And you know what? Out of all the couples that I think I've ever counseled in the last 10 years or so, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, Scott, man, you know, man, I just really need my husband to blank. Or, man, Scott, if I could just get her to work hard, I mean, I just really need her to work hard on this. Or, you know, I really need my wife, I really need her to understand me. Or, man, I really need my husband to be involved with our family more. Man, and you know what, I could go on and on and on. But as you know, needs are everywhere. You have them, I have them, we all have needs. And I think that it's not just the knowledge of those needs. I think it's not just knowing about the needs. But I think it's about meeting the needs. And if we can know the needs and if we can meet the needs, I think it will provide our marriages with the strength and the fulfillment that God desires for each one of us to have. But then on the other end of the spectrum, when the needs of our marriages aren't met, man, the doors and the windows of our marriage will remain open. Man, just like that house sitting in the middle of the Amazon jungle, door open, wild animals coming in, creating a mess. Man, when the doors of our marriages and the windows, when they remain open, it provides a great entry point for our enemy, Satan, to come in and bring division and bring temptation and all sorts of other problems. See, marital needs, I think, are so important because, look, here's the deal. If a marital need goes unmet, guess what happens? The temptation to go outside of the marriage to get that need met will get stronger and stronger until one day there's this drifting that has occurred in the relationship. And once that drifting begins in one area, it begins to spread. And then weeks go by. And then months go by. And years go by. And all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you no longer have a spouse. You simply just have a roommate. And you know, it never happens intentionally. I mean, you know, no one wants their marriage to deteriorate. No one walks down the aisle on that wedding day and says, well, you know, it's all right. I mean, it may not work. But hey, you know, a couple years would be fun. You know, no one wants their relationship with their husband or their wife to drift apart. So see, this whole needs thing is just so important. And in fact, I'm almost tempted just to say, you know, let's take a month and just talk about meeting needs. And so I think we have to ask ourselves, what steps can we take to ensure that my husband or that my wife's needs are being met so that the doors and the windows are kept shut to the evil one and to everything that he brings with him? Division, temptation, affairs, and not just with women or men, affairs with other things. You know, maybe for some of you, and I know that in this room at any moment there's always a diversity of people, and maybe there's some of you who are here today and you would say, you know what, Scott, man, I'll be honest with you, my marriage was never great to begin with. I mean, you know, we got married, and maybe we got married for the wrong reasons, and I don't know, it just hasn't worked out, it just hasn't been good, or maybe at one time your marriage was great. And maybe you can remember a time when your marriage was the greatest thing in your life, and now it's become the most horrible thing in your life. But regardless of how great or how gruesome your marriage might be, I really want you to grasp some things we're going to talk about today. And I just want to say, if you're single or you're divorced and you're not remarried or you're a teenager, don't zone out on what I have to say, because look, more than likely one day you are going to be married, and if you can grab hold of this stuff, perhaps you can get a better start on your marriage than many of us have had in ours. Today I want to present a challenge to all of you. In fact, the series that we're in, of course, is Desperate Households, and the series is all about getting up and looking at this beautiful white fence that we all love to hide behind on occasion. And when we look behind that white picket fence, we find that things are not always as they seem. And so this series is all about getting honest with some issues and getting honest with ourselves, getting honest with God, and being willing to humble ourselves before Him and ask for that four-lettered word, help. By the way, did everybody like the Beatles song last Sunday, Help? Did it drive you nuts all week like it's supposed to? Okay, good. Somebody emailed me and said, I can't get this song out of my head. It's terrorizing me. I said, good. That's what we wanted. But, you know, I think it's a lot more than just asking God for His help. I mean, yeah, that's a big part of it. I think that's the first step. But I think it's also looking and saying, you know what? What can I do to truly meet the needs of my husband or my wife? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And I just want to warn you, this is not an easy task. Look, marriage is not easy. And in fact, I remember before I got married, people would say to me, now, Scott, marriage is a lot of work. And I remember kind of going, oh, that stinks. I mean, I don't really like that idea. You know, I just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I didn't excite me very much, you know, because, hey, I just wanted it to be easy. But here's the thing. Think about what happens, hopefully, at your job when you work real hard. Or in your home or wherever it is you work hard. Guess what? You get rewarded. And I'm going to tell you, the reward that comes from hard work in our marriages, I think, is one that is worth every bit of effort that you have to put into it. But, of course, the opposite is also true. Because here's the deal. If you're lazy, everyone say lazy. Now, don't be looking at your spouse when you say that. Okay? So, some of you are like, But look, if you're lazy, and if you don't work hard at meeting the needs of your spouse, I'm going to tell you something. You are going to have a weak marriage. In fact, honestly, you'll be lucky if you even have a marriage down the road. So let's talk about meeting needs. How do we meet needs? How do we identify what those needs are? These are the types of questions we need to ask. Because, look, here's what typically happens in most marriages. First of all, we assume, don't we? We make a lot of assumptions. For example, we assume that we know what each other's needs are. Well, Scott, man, I've been married for 10 years. Man, I know my wife's needs. I don't need to listen to the sermon. Man, I've been married for 25 years. I know my wife's needs. I just know them. Are you sure? I mean, are you really sure that you know her needs? Or worse, we do this. We think that whatever my needs are must be what my spouse's needs are. Well, you know, I need affection. I need an attractive spouse. I need conversation. So, you know what? Surely that's what my husband needs. Or surely that's what my wife needs. And so we spend a lot of time trying to meet needs that don't even exist a lot of times. Or we're trying to meet needs how we think we should meet them when, you know what, sometimes there's a better way to meet needs than how you think. So, let's talk about them. A couple of things you need to understand. If you have your bulletins, grab them, the new fancy schmancy full-color versions of your bulletin. Take those out. There's some notes in there. That is not space to write notes about what you need to pick up at Jewel today, okay? Is that for me? Oh, okay. So, take out your bulletin. I want you to write these down today. Here's the first one. Let's talk about needs. Number one, my needs are not the same as my spouse's needs. Go ahead and write that down. My needs are not the same as my spouse's needs. Look, what you need to be fulfilled and satisfied in your marriage relationship is probably not the same thing that your spouse needs to be fulfilled and satisfied. So here's a good rule. Don't ever assume. And I think that's a good rule for life, period. Don't ever assume. Several years ago, I read a book by a guy named Dr. Willard Harley. Here it is on the screens. It's called His Needs, Her Needs. And It's a pretty good book. I would say, you know how you read a book and you agree with some of it you don't. I would say this one reached about a 90% level of things I agreed with. And usually if we're above the 50, that's, you know, you can pull some good stuff out. But this is a good book. And in this book, it's interesting because he finds that most men have similar needs. And then, of course, he finds that most women have very similar needs. And I wanted to show you these real quick. There's some space in your bulletin to write these down. So I want to give you these. Let's talk about men first. Men's most basic need. Dr. Harley says this, and number one, can anyone guess, by the way, what man's most basic need is? Okay, now this might shock some of you wives. Okay, you ready? Drum roll. Sexual fulfillment. I know, it's hard to believe. Man's most basic need, sexual fulfillment. Here's one, recreational companionship. That's big for guys, man. They need to know that their wives dig hanging out with them and doing things with them. Here's another one, an attractive spouse. Now, see, that gets all twisted because a lot of times women get intimidated by that because they say, oh, well, that means I have to look like so-and-so. No, because, I mean, we all interpret beauty differently, and so that doesn't mean your husband expects you to look like Jessica Simpson, okay? So you can quit worrying about it, all right? Now, here's another one, domestic support. And then another one is admiration. Guys, man, we like to be admired, don't we? Huh? Oh, yeah. You know it. Oh, come on. Don't look at me like that, you liars, okay? You know that you like your wife to look at you and go, "You are so hot." I mean, you know when you come home from work, you want your wife to go, "Here's my husband." Okay, let's talk about the women. Okay, here it is. Woman's most basic need, number one, is affection. Now, I know what some of you guys are thinking. You're thinking, now, isn't that the same thing as sex? No! Okay, here's another one. Conversation. Another one. Honesty and openness. And your wives, our wives like us to be honest and just be open and share with them. Here's another one, financial support. They like to know we care about them and taking care of their needs. Another one is family commitment. Women and our wives want us to be there for the family and help take care of the family. Now, let me just say this, that you might be looking at this list and you might be saying, okay, you know what, I don't totally agree with that. There's one or two on there that don't really describe me. And that's okay. I did not share this list to say to you, these are what they are, period. These are just kind of a guide and very general. In fact, you might have looked at some on the women's list and said, you know, that really identifies with me as a male. And that's very possible. So that's no problem. Don't worry about that. But I want you to look at that list for a moment. And what a list. I mean, quite different from one another, really, if you think about it. And so no wonder why so many of us have trouble adjusting in our marriages. Look, a man can have the best intentions in the world to meet his wife's needs. But if he thinks that her needs are similar to his own, guess what will happen? He will fail miserably in trying to meet her needs. And the same thing with women. So that's why we have to decide, you know what, we're not going to assume. And here's the thing. Honestly, I think that often the failure of men and women to meet each other's needs is simply due to the ignorance of what those needs are. I think sometimes we say, man, my wife, man, she, I tell you what, she's just selfish. She is just unwilling to meet my needs. Or my husband, man, he just doesn't care about me. He's just selfish. He's all into his stuff. But you know what? I think probably more times than not, it's not an issue of selfishness or that you're unwilling to meet each other's needs as much as it is that you are just ignorant as to what those needs are. So, by learning to understand your spouse as a totally different person than you, I think you can begin to become an expert at meeting each other's needs if you're willing to work hard. But I'll tell you what, you have to be willing to sit down, you have to be willing to talk, you have to be willing to learn about each other. Now, here's another thing that's kind of important. Number two, these needs, they play off of each other. That's right, they play off of each other. Imagine, in fact, really, it's not something to imagine, it's for real, man. Our marriages, you and your wife, if you're married here, you have love banks. Your life is made up of a love bank, and that love bank is invisible. But here's what happens. When that love bank is full of deposits, the payout is great. But man, when that love bank is empty, it's called bankrupt. And so we have to make sure that we're constantly making deposits into these love banks. And I think this, every time that you are meeting the need of your wife or your husband, you are making a deposit into that love bank. And there's a scripture that I thought of, and we don't have it on the screens, but it's Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, says this, and this is very biblical. Do not be misled. No one makes a fool of God. What a person plants, he will harvest. The person who plants selfishness, ignoring the needs of others, ignoring God, harvests a crop of weeds. How many of you love weeds, huh? How many of you planted weeds this last spring? Did you guys get those weeds planted? No, you don't have to plant. You don't have to be intentional about weeds. We just show up. And it says this, all that he'll have to show or all she'll have to show for their life is weeds. But the one who plants in response to God, letting God's Spirit do the growth work in him, harvests a crop of real life, eternal life. Look, what goes around comes around. What you sow, you will also reap. Look, if I am intentional about meeting the needs of my wife, and I'll tell you, I mean, look, there are times that I know that I have not made the deposits I need to make. Because when I pull that ATM card out, and I go to the ATM machine, and I push my PIN number on there, bam, 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 insufficient funds, I know there's a problem. Jesus said this in 2 Corinthians. He said, hey, remember this. He who sows sparingly and grudgingly will also reap sparingly and grudgingly. And he who sows generously will also reap generously. Look, if you don't make deposits into your bank account that you bank at, and you decide one day, hey, I think I'm going to go pull out $1,000. Well, if there's not $1,000 in there, you're not getting $1,000. And here's what happens in our marriages. We go to our wife, give me $1,000. Come on. Or we go to our husbands. Come on. I got to make a withdrawal here. But there haven't been any deposits made. So see, the next time that you're frustrated because you feel like your spouse isn't meeting your needs, go back and look at your checkbook. Look at your bank statement. Have I made any deposits? All right, one more thing. Here's something to keep in mind. Needs change. Go ahead and jot that down. Needs change. They do. They change. Look, what I needed 10 years ago when I got married and what I need today is not the same thing. They change. And I think the reason for that is because we all change in our lives. I mean, hopefully we all change. I mean, in fact, I think that as you grow in your relationship with one another and as you grow in your relationship with God, I think we mature, we change, we go through things in our lives. And I think that probably because we change, our needs change. And I'll tell you, I mean, I can give you a great example of that. I know for me in my life, what I needed 10 years, I've been married 9 years, it'll be 10 in May. Isn't that cool? All right, hold back the applause. All right, anyway, look, that's pretty good nowadays, make it 10 years. So anyway, but what I needed 10 years ago is real different from what I need now. In fact, man, I can just tell you, these last 2 years of my life have been just crazy times. You know how you have those seasons of your life and you just go through things. And I can see in my own life how things have changed as I've gone through different things. And I think that happens. So that's why this is constant work. I don't think it ever ends. I don't think it's ever, well, I got all the needs figured out of my wife. I know what my husband's needs are, whatever. I don't think it ever ends. It's constant work. It's constantly discovering what each other's needs are and working towards meeting those needs. So, again, my needs are not the same as my spouse's needs. Our needs, they play off of each other. Needs, they change. Now, let me get real practical with you today. In fact, I want to give you some homework. Thank you. Okay, I'll give you some homework. And seriously, I want you to do this. This is important. Okay, and I'm really serious. I want you to do this because I promise you, read my lips, I promise you, this will change your marriage relationship. I promise. In fact, I would even go as far as to say that if you will do this and apply this to your marriage, you will shut the door to divorce. You will shut the door to separation. You will shut the door to affairs. You will shut the door to all these kind of things that the enemy would love to bring into your marriage. And I really believe this. And in fact, when I meet with couples for premarital counseling, this is one of the first things we do. So here's what I want you to do. Sometime this week, I want you to get all alone by yourself. I want you to sit down with a piece of paper and I want you to write this statement down. In order to be happy and fulfilled in this marriage, I need my spouse. I need blank, whatever their name is. I need them to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. List 5 things that you need. 5 essential things that you need from them in order to be satisfied and fulfilled in this marriage. 5 things. Don't write down 40 things. Write down 5 things, okay? I want you to write down your top 5 needs. Don't do this with your spouse. Do it by yourself. Okay, then, after you get your list done, I want you to do something that you probably haven't done in a long time. I want you to have a date night. Oh, yeah. Some of you have forgotten what dating is. Why do we stop dating when we get married, huh? What's the problem with there's a problem there. But I want you to get away from your children. I want you to forget the double dating for this night, okay? And I want you to get alone with your husband or with your wife, and I want you to bring the lists along with you. Okay? And I want you to do this. I want you to sit down, have your dinner, whatever, and then after dinner, go find a coffee shop, sit down, and I want you to share your list with each other. And then beyond that, I want you to do this. As you go through that list, I want you to rate where you think your spouse is at on that list. With one being, you know, pathetic, like you are clueless, and you're lucky that I'm still even married to you, and 10 being you are incredible at this and you couldn't even improve, okay? And I want you to do that. Now, trust me, okay? Now, listen, guys. Okay, now I know that a bunch of us guys, we get nervous about going out on a date with our wives alone because then we would have to talk. So, oh yeah, you're afraid to laugh because your wife's sitting next to you, but she knows it. So you don't have to, okay. So, but here's the thing. This exercise will give you plenty to talk about, okay? I promise you that. So you sit down, you rate each other on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you do one more thing beyond that. And maybe this could be a start of date night. Huh? That's a concept. And you could do this the first night. Then the next week, you take out that list again, and you've rated where each other are at, and then you talk to each other about how to get that 5, how to gradually get that 5 up to a 10. Or how to gradually get that 3 up to a 4, a 5, a 6, all the way up to 10. And I say gradually because, man, I mean, I don't know about your marriage, but I know for me, if there's things I need to change, it takes time. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't think that effort is ever looked down on. In fact, I think that when we are trying, when we're making attempts to meet our spouse's needs, I think that closes the door. Because here's the thing. If I know that my wife is working hard at meeting all those needs that she's I'm still waiting on her to meet. No, I'm totally kidding. You're like, I can't believe we just said that. No. But seriously, if I know that my wife, or if you know your husband or your wife is working on meeting your needs, they may not be perfect, but if you see effort, it's almost the same as them doing it, isn't it? And it closes the door. It closes the window. So I want you to do that. And here's the thing. You might write down, okay, well, family commitment. Don't leave it at that. Talk to your husband. Talk to your wife about what that means. What does that look like for you? Because what I think family commitment looks like and what she thinks family commitment looks like might be very different. And even though I'm trying to fulfill that family commitment need, if I'm not meeting it in a way that meets that need for her, I'm not meeting it. I want to close with one more, number 4, that's not in your notes, but you can write this down because I think this is important. And I think any time we talk about needs, we have to remember this, but it's this number 4. There are some needs in our lives that only God can fulfill. There are some needs in our lives that only God is capable of meeting. You know, only God can bring true fulfillment in your life. I mean, this idea, well, you know, I don't have good self-esteem, so I think I'm going to get married, that'll help me. No. Or you know, man, I'm emotionally unhealthy, so I think I'm going to get married, that'll help. No. There are some things that only God can fulfill for you. Only God can provide you with supernatural peace in difficult moments of your life. And you know what? Yeah, your wife, your husband, they might be there for you in those hard times, and they might comfort you, and they'll try to help you. But I'm going to tell you, only God can bring you that supernatural peace that pushes you through those difficult moments. Only God can help you see yourself the way that He sees you. Your spouse can't do that for you. And all too often, we place this expectancy upon our spouse to meet needs that they're not even capable of meeting anyway. And when you do that, man, it's going to bring such frustration to your marriage. It's going to bring such frustration to you. It's going to bring frustration to your spouse. Because what's happening is you're trying to get a need met in your life by a human being when the need that you have can't be met by a human being. And that's what makes God, God, with a capital G. So there's some needs that only God can fulfill. And I just want to tell you today, God so desires to meet those needs in your life. God so desires, and He is so willing, and He is so ready to pour out His goodness in your life. And all you have to do is receive it and accept it as yours. You know, I know that in this room, every Sunday, every weekend, in the first service, here in the second service, there are groups of people. There are people here who are all at different places on their spiritual journey. And that's one thing I love about the Orchard. We don't all come in and try to pretend that we're all the same, or that we all, you know, we all talk the same or sound the same. We're all different. And that's great. But our hope and our prayer is that you don't just remain where you're at, but that you take steps forward. And some of you, you might be right on the edge where you've been hearing about God. You've been hearing about Jesus Christ and how He can change your life. And you've just kind of been putting your feet in the water, and you know it's right, and you know it's good, and you know it's for you, but you just haven't taken that step yet for whatever reason. Maybe you've been trying to figure it out. Maybe your attitude is, you know what, once I understand it, then I'll do it. You know what, I got news for you. You're never going to fully understand it. God is so big, God is so great, that you'll never understand all there is to understand about God. And perhaps today you're right on that edge, and God is just kind of pulling at your heart. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're just still kind of checking it all, and that's okay, and keep coming back. But I want to take a moment today, and I want to close with a prayer. And this prayer is a prayer that says simply, you know what, God, I recognize that I need you in my life. I've been the leader of my life, or someone else or something else has been the leader of my life. You haven't been, and I realize that I need to make you my boss. I realize you need to be the CEO of my life. And so I'm going to say a prayer this morning, and I'm just going to ask you that as I pray this prayer, just in your own way, say the same words to God. I'm going to tell you, it's the greatest thing you can ever do is to invite Jesus Christ to be in your life and to be the leader of your family, leader of you, leader of your wife, your spouse, your household. I want to invite you to do that today. Can we bow our heads this morning? God, it's almost impossible to talk about the subject of needs and pass by the opportunity to call out to you to meet needs in our lives that only you are capable of meeting. And I know, God, there are times in my life that I try to get needs met my own way, or I try to put pressure on other people to meet those needs when only you can. So, God, I join with a lot of people here today in asking you to meet our needs, and asking you to meet the needs that only you can fulfill and meet in our lives. And God, perhaps there are some people here today who have been standing right on the edge of inviting you into their life, and they just, for whatever reason, haven't done it yet. And today, I just know that your Holy Spirit's been kind of tugging at their hearts. And so, God, right now, I just say this very simple prayer to you. And just even as I pray this, just say this in your own way to Him. God in heaven, I know that I need you. And I believe that you sent your Son to this earth to die for the sins of the world, and that includes me. God, I know that without you in my life, I have nothing. And so today, I call out to you, and I invite you to become the leader of my life. I invite you to become the Lord of my life. I believe that you died on the cross for my sins. I believe that you died and that you rose again and that you're alive today. And I need your power, and I need your ability, and I need you in my life. And so I open my heart to you now, and I invite you in to be the leader and the king and the ruler of my life. And I ask that now, and I pray that in Christ's name. Amen.